Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Here's Randy.
Thank you for tuning in today to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. Today, I am so happy to bring to you my special guest, Dan L. Hayes. Dan is a very dear friend of mine. Dan and I met 5 years ago on Twitter when I was a burgeoning author, and he took me under his wing and so knowledgeably coached me through the publishing process. And then a few years later, with the experience of a successful radio show of his own called Dialogues with Dignity, Dan encouraged me to enter the world of broadcasting too. I will provide you with the links to Dan's website and radio show at the end of this show. Dan L. Hayes is more than my friend. He is a very interesting person who is supremely knowledgeable on the topic of post-traumatic stress disorder, also known as PTSD. Dan was diagnosed with chronic and severe post-traumatic stress disorder from two incidents that occurred in his childhood, incidents that he only remembered when he was an adult. Dan struggled for years with hypervigilance, flashbacks, a severe sleep disorder, and other PTSD symptoms. In 1987, Dan's life was spinning out of control as he was trying to put together and remember pieces of his past that were struggling to come to the surface. He was broke, unable to go look for a job, at times suicidal, and completely mystified by it all. After years of struggle with PTSD symptoms, in 1988, Dan remembered a violent incident that happened with his dad when he was 17. His first memoir, Freedom's Just Another Word, chronicles his healing process from that event. In 2003, Dan began to remember more traumatic events that happened to him when he was a little boy, when he was only 8 years old. After expressing his dream of becoming a famous writer someday to his grandmother threatened to have him locked up in an insane asylum if he became a writer, and then locked him in a dark closet to show him how it would feel. This led to a writer's block for many years and the second source of Dan's PTSD. Dan is about to finish his second book, Healing the Writer, about his recovery process from that abuse. And now it is my pleasure, privilege, and honor to welcome my special guest and dear friend, Dan L. Hayes, to the show. Hi, Dan. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Randy, and I sure appreciate you having me on the show. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So, Dan, why don't you tell us what exactly PTSD is?
It's a great starting point, because I think there may be some confusion about what it actually involves. Let me just start with the American Psychiatric Association definition. They define PTSD as, and it's kind of a mouthful, by the way, so just hang on and pay close attention. They define PTSD as occurring when a person is exposed to a traumatic event in which the person experienced, witnessed, or was confronted with an event or events that involved actual or threatened death or serious injury or a threat to the physical integrity of self or others. And the person's response involved intense fear, helplessness, or horror. That's the basic, and then they go on to list a number of symptoms or signs that someone has PTSD. I'll just list a couple of the big ones. One is re-experience of the trauma, which can occur like with nightmares or flashbacks, almost like you're living through it again. You may have emotional numbing where you feel detached or estranged from others. You tend to avoid places or people that might arouse recollections of the trauma. And here's a real key one. You have heightened arousal. You may have difficulty falling or staying asleep, irritability or outbursts of anger, hypervigilance, and an exaggerated startle response. So all of those things may signal PTSD.
So now we have an understanding of what it is. But so you had PTSD. What was it like for you?
Well, it's like you mentioned in the intro. It was baffling. I was having all the symptoms. It's like I had the effects, but I had no cause. This was in the middle 80s. They weren't talking about PTSD much. It wasn't that well documented at that point. I just happened to run across a book in the library that gave the definition. And I went, well, this is, I'm going through all this. What is going on here? I was starting to have flashbacks. I was getting memories back, but I didn't, for the most part, I didn't say that I had a traumatic event that involved threatened death or serious injury. It's like, what? I don't have that. But I was having things like, for particularly the hypervigilance, I would be on kind of what I call my on-patrol mentality. I'd be standing in the parking lot. I remember this vividly. After a movie one night, we were standing in the parking lot, and my friends are just chatting away, and I'm looking around for threats in the dark. And I'm just super hyper. The sleep disorder was probably the biggest signal for me. I would go to work, come home, exercise, feel well-rested, be ready to go to bed. I'd lay down about 10:30, 10:45, and suddenly at 11 o'clock at night, I'd snap wide awake and be awake till 3 a.m. So I had all this, you know, I'd have to come home and take a nap the next day to try to catch up, and it would recur, and I just didn't have any reason that all this was happening, but it was like you were saying in the intro, my life was spinning out of control because of it.
Let me ask you a quick question. Was 11 o'clock significant for you?
Yes. It turns out.
Okay. All right.
It turns out. Well, yeah, but I mean, I didn't know at the time. Actually, 11
right.
to 3, because
okay.
that's when, what I remembered after doing a lot of work to get to that point, the violent incident with my dad was that I was working in a hamburger joint as a busboy when I was like 16, and I came home late at night, and usually my dad would be passed out drunk on the couch. Well, I came home one night, and he was awake, and he had a hunting rifle there.
Oh, my God.
He had bullets out. And I intuitively, I knew that the gun was loaded. Well, what I had discovered afterwards, he had just been fired or was being threatened with being fired from his job. And he said, "Where have you been?" And I said, "Well, I've been at my job." And he said, "Don't you ever think you're better than me because you've got a job."
Gosh.
I don't give all the details because it could trigger people, but basically there was a violent incident that I was in fear for my life and didn't think I was going to leave the room alive.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I didn't mean to interrupt you. You were telling us what it looked like for you. Okay, so you were saying that you couldn't sleep. You would have these, you know, you'd wake up at night.
Yep.
What else?
I'd wake up at night. I started to have a real anger issue. that I couldn't figure out. It was like this free-floating anger that would almost go off at any moment. I had a couple clues that something was going on. I did a prison ministry in the early 80s where we'd go into the prison and work with the inmates. And these inmates, here I'm a skinny little white kid, and these inmates would accord me enormous respect. What I figured out later is that they could see my intimate acquaintance with violence and the anger that bubbled around it. You know, I went to the Vietnam Wall when it came to Houston one time to see my cousin's name listed up there. He had died in Vietnam. And I got really emotional. One of the counselors, one of the guys who was hanging over, was a vet. He came over and said, "Hey, dude, are you okay?" What I realized later, he thought I was looking at my buddies from combat on the wall because I carried all the signs of someone who has been in violent situations.
Wow.
Weird experience.
Very weird.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Well, so basically, with all of that going on, in the middle of it, my dad died, and I started feeling this really extreme anger come up. And this is all chronicled in the first book, Freedom's Just Another Word. I wrote down what I'm angry about, everything I'm angry about, and it was this unholy trinity, I called it, God, my dad, and the church. You know, so I had all this free-floating anger, and so I did what is recommended in the 12-step programs. I needed to tell somebody about this. I sat down with a minister at my church and read him everything I'd written. He said, "Dan, you've opened up a real can of worms here. Don't be surprised if this doesn't stir up something deeper." And about 3 days after that, I had a dream where someone was chasing me with a gun. I ran into an old abandoned mine shaft and suddenly realized I was trapped. I turned and faced the person, and it was my dad.
How profound.
That was for me the trigger that let me know something's in there and it's got to come out. And my this therapist / sponsor who I was working with in the 12-step programs, he was my mentor in the program, but he was also a therapist. He had been trying to get me to do gestalt exercises, which is my one part of me sit and talk to the young part of me and say what happened, which I had kind of gone, yeah, right, sure, that'll work. And what I discovered at that point, Randy, desperation is a great motivator because, you know, my dad had just died. My uncle said at one point, "You know, Dan, your dad ate his anger and it killed him." I was headed down that same road. Yeah. So I got with
a guy.
So
you're very fortunate that you had these symptoms that allowed you to bring all this up.
Oh, absolutely. Particularly since I couldn't remember the event.
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm walking around with all these symptoms and I'm blessed to have gotten down to what it was all about. So I sat down with a guy who had been in a therapy group with me. He was a big, large male. He came over to my house, and I said, "Yeah, I just need you to watch. Let me see if I can do anything that'll work here." So he watched. I set up two chairs facing each other, and I started doing sort of an inner child dialogue and said, "Danny, would you tell me what happened?" Didn't expect much, and he came out and told me everything that had happened.
That must have blown your mind.
it was totally mind-boggling. But, Randy, here's the point. It was such a sense of relief because now everything in my world made sense. I had a very successful career that I worked very hard to sabotage because the message from my dad was, if you are successful, bad, bad, bad things will happen.
Wow.
You know, so now I understood a lot. Now, it wasn't solved. You know,
right.
I had to do something about it. But at least I had something to work with.
Right. Can you tell us a little bit about the grandma thing? Because, you know, as I explained in the intro, that there were two sources of your PTSD. And so one was the father, which we understand. And then the other one was the grandmother.
Randy, that one, well, okay. Back in the mid-80s, I wrote my first book. I sent it off to a recovery publisher. They called me 3 days later and said, Mr. Hayes, we want to publish your book. We're in love with it. I walked away from it. 10 years later, I wrote a second book. I wrote a novel, had 5 agents and a publisher express interest. I walked away from it. And I was just terribly frustrated by this writing block. I thought it had to do somehow with all the events with my dad. And yet I started working with a healer out in, when I moved to New Mexico for a while, who said, yeah, there's something really deeply buried, and it's about your creativity. And that's when I started going. I went to a safe place, which was the library, and wrote down another sort of inner child dialogue, which was, Danny, why can't you write? What's going on? What came out was that just what you chronicled, when I went to, I was 8 years old, I went down to Fort Worth to visit my family, the grandparents, and my dad's mother, almost as soon as I came into the house, said, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? Which was a bizarre question. I mean, why did that just pop out of her mouth? And that's when we had the dialogue where she said, yes, I said, I want to be a famous writer. And I was all excited about it. And she said, oh, no, you don't want to do that. I said, why not? She said, because if you do that, they'll call you crazy and lock you up. What a thing to say to a kid. Well, then she later told me, this came out over about 2 years in various chunks because it was too painful to deal with all at once. She basically said, hey, I've talked to the doctor I work for, and he has agreed that if you grow up and you become a writer and you get crazy, he will have you locked up. And then the third part of it was she shut me up in a closet to show me what it would be like.
Oh,
and left me
God.
In a dark closet for a couple of hours.
No wonder you had PTSD
yeah.
from that. That's so traumatic for a child.
Oh, it was horrific. And like one therapist said, you know you didn't have a chance counteracting those messages.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely yeah. not. Absolutely not. So, wow, amazing. So now that you know more about PTSD and how it affected you, do you think there's a lot of people walking around that have this from childhood issues that maybe they're not aware of?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I got involved in the 80s with a group for people who had grown up with alcoholism. One of the things that they said in their introduction was, as you go through this process, feelings and buried memories will return. When I first went into the program, I had no idea what they were talking about. That didn't apply to me until I started seeing it. And I think because, particularly for children, the events are so horrific and so scalding to their soul that they just repress it completely, like I did. They block it out, and they may act out the symptoms or, you know, have drug problems or alcohol issues, different things like that, anger issues, overeating issues, different symptoms that they don't connect back to the PTSD and or the childhood of the violence or childhood abuse. I think there's
right.
a lot of them out there, Randy.
Right. For anybody that's listening, and I will give, I have posted Dan's website on my radio show page. I'll give it again at the end of the show. But for anybody that has any issues and wants to discuss this with Dan, you can certainly contact him through his website. And if you'd like to give your email, Dan, that would be fine too. Go ahead if you want to give it.
Comments at danlhayes, danlhayes.com.
Okay, perfect. Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, so we're talking about that a lot of people are walking around having this. That that may explain a lot to some people who really don't understand where all their anger and their anxiety and everything is coming from. So it's very important that they understand what this PTSD is. And if they so once a person discovers that they have PTSD, what do they do? I mean, what do they do? What's the first step to do? How do they overcome it, and can they overcome it?
You know, Randy, somebody once had, I'd had an interview where somebody said, what's the takeaway? And I said, well, I just thought about it for a second. I said, no matter what the abuse, there is the hope of healing. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can overcome it. I believe that it's really deeply embedded, and it takes a little while. not, well, a little while. It takes as long as it takes. But I was on a radio interview about 2 weeks ago where, before I was on, they had a lady who was in ran a PTSD trauma resolution center. It was very interesting. You don't do just one thing. You do a number of things and make progress that way. What she described was a lot of the things that I tried. You know, once again, out of desperation, you can resolve a lot of those issues, because what I was told back in the early and middle 80s was that the feelings from the trauma are trapped in our body at the cellular level. So it's like when we blocked it out, when we suppressed all that, we didn't feel it.
We never felt
my
it?
My process. No,
At the point that it happened, we didn't feel it?
I didn't feel it. I didn't feel it directly. And sometimes it's because you are, number one, when you're in the middle of it, you're so just shocked that you can't feel anything. You go numb. And then afterwards, you're in that shock. And so you just kind of block it all out and eat all that. You know, you turn it inward. And those feelings never get to come out. Well, what I discovered, I was fortunate enough to find a group in the late 80s that really dealt with releasing feelings. You know, now anger, I before I even got all these memories back, I had spent a year in a boxing gym just because I was so angry I needed to hit something. And so I really released a lot of anger that way, but releasing fear, you know, sadness, okay, you cry, but releasing fear was the one that really helped for me. Because what I have discovered is that my legs will shake, and that's flight, or my arms will shake, and that's fight. And releasing the feelings at that level of the fear that happened, you know, and how I felt about it. You do it for a while, you don't think it's ever going to stop, and then after a while it just kind of subsides and fades away because you empty that bucket of feelings.
So how is your healing process going? I mean, are you completely healed? I know you've been at this for many years.
Well, I'm uncomfortable with absolute statements anymore, so I don't say perfectly. I'm a human. But it's tremendously better than it was before. I have published my first book, which was the cause of the trauma from my grandmother. I'm about to publish my second book. After I did a lot of the work about the violence with my dad, for 20 years I had an incredibly successful career, which I had a lot of opportunities. So in terms of being able to return to functioning, I have had I've been really blessed. But I think the other part for me was, like I said before, I was so desperate, I was willing to do anything, and I really worked at it a lot, you know, and spent a lot of time releasing the feelings and doing things differently, you know, saying I'm not going to give power to my grandmother to, you know, to lock up my writing.
And so when did you feel the most release, where you felt your writing begin to flow again?
Well, the funny part was, I think it was when I got the vision for Freedom's Just Another Word. I'd known I wanted to write that book for a number of years, and that was where I was really surprised because, hey, something's changed. I can write. I moved. I relocated and got a new job, and I could still continue to write on it. And when I got close to publication, this is what's kind of strange or interesting. When I got close to publication, that was when the feelings and the memories about my grandmother and her issues came to the surface, because I'd tried to publish two books before and walked away. What forced my healing to the surface, I didn't recognize at the time, was getting ready to publish a book. I mean, where I was going to writers' conferences, I was meeting with literary agents, I was doing everything that I could tell that it was about to happen. And that's where it really kind of like broke the dam loose.
How did that feel?
It was scary. I mean, you know, I'd go to this writer's conference and lay in my hotel room the night before, shaking like a leaf until 2 a.m. And it forced the issue to the surface, and after a while, those feelings and that fear, I released the fear that I felt when I was in the room with my grandmother, where she was saying, they'll call you crazy and lock you up. And now it's gotten a lot easier to contemplate going to publication with this next book.
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, I feel the joy of writing, which is what I felt when I was 6 years old, that the woman robbed from me when I was eight.
What an evil woman.
I agree.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Evil, and I finally had to say to little Danny, that's my inner child, you know this woman was flat crazy. She was like, what? You know, I'm like, oh, yeah, because she had assured me that she was the expert on everything. So
right, and a child doesn't question that. That's the adult, and that's an important person in your life. Why would you question her?
Sure. Absolutely. You've got to take what she says and go with it. And, you know, it was so horrific to lose my joy of writing that I just couldn't handle it. Now, the other healing sign, I've been working as a freelance writer for the last 2 years. The big question for me for many years is, can I write when I need to? And mostly it was like I had to do these really, you know, go hide out somewhere to write so nobody would know I was doing it. And now I'm publishing articles every month.
Amazing.
And I can do them on a schedule. I never miss a deadline. So that's, for me, a huge sign of the healing.
Do you still have flashbacks?
I still have tremors occasionally. I'll have a blip, you know, if I have, it's not like where I go into complete mental lockdown, but certain times of year or certain events, like I was at a basketball game last night, and I still have to watch myself around crowds. I can only take so much because all the noise and stimulation, it's like I need to go back and calm down now. But not like where I was first getting back the memories. It's tapered off to where it's just minor and much more noticeable. If I get into a hyper mode, I can see myself doing it, and I say, okay, something just scared you. Chill out for a minute and see, get grounded again.
Right. Well, we're coming down to about 2 minutes left in the show. I want to thank you for coming on the show, Dan. Again, Dan's website is danlhayes.com. That's danlhayes.com. www.danlhayes.com. And when you go to his website, you can find links to his show Dialogue with Dignity, but I'll give that to you again, Dialogues with Dignity. That's Dialogues, D-I-A-L-O-G-U-E-S, with, W-I-T-H, Dignity. DIGNITY.podbean.com. Dialogues with Dignity at podbean. I'm having a hard time with this. Dialogues with Dignity.podbean.com. Okay, did I get it right?
Yep, that's it.
Okay, cool. And I want to thank you so much for coming onto the show and telling your story and helping others to maybe identify what's going on within them.
You're quite welcome, Randy. I'm glad to do it. And I, like you said, I'll be glad to dialogue with anybody who would like to talk about it or say, what, you know, help me figure out what I'm experiencing.
Okay, that's wonderful. So you hear that? Everyone that's listening, take advantage, because he is a wonderful source and he can really guide you. I know that he's guided me in many ways, so I highly recommend him. but I'm sorry to say that we are out of time, but if you have any comments about today's show or any other shows, please email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. And Randy is always spelled R-A-N-D-I. Stop by my website, randygfine.com, and sign the guest book. I welcome feedback about my shows, so you can leave comments for me there as well. Please stop by to visit me on my Facebook page, Randy G. Fine, and like me. My page is filled with inspirational picture quotes that you can enjoy and then share. If you enjoy listening to my shows, please become a show follower. More followers will get the show the recognition that it deserves. Visit my blog at randygfine.com for even more inspiration and join the list of devoted followers there. All my shows are archived after broadcasting and can be listened to at your convenience on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, or through the show links on my website. Thanks again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is Talk Radio show host and author Randy Fine, signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about Randy at her website, Randy G. Fine, RandyGFine.com. Join her next time for more of A Fine Time for Healing.
Hard not to hesitate, but we can't wait to be the change. There's a better way.